delighted and honored to be joined by our colleague, Judge Sue Myerscough from the Central District of Illinois. The first case set for argument this morning is LeGrand versus the United States, number 11-2205. Mr. Jovan?
May it please the court, Bill Jovan appearing here for the plaintiff appellant this morning. I think the best place to start is to try to put this case in its proper perspective and set the stage for exactly what we're talking about here, and it concerns the duty of the United States government to provide an official severe turbulence forecast to pilots. This is the 11th Circuit statement of the government's concession regarding this area of the law, which we have abundantly set forth in our brief. The United States does not refute it, so we'll proceed along those lines. It concerns the fact that forecasted severe turbulence that existed in this case is non-discretionary once it's been reached, and it's between the United States government and the pilots. So we are talking about the procedures. How does the United States government get this information to the pilots? In the scenario of this case, we submit to the court that there are abundant, unrefuted facts, especially as set forth in the additional facts that plaintiff provided to the court below, to which defendant did not respond. And according to the District Court Local Rule 56.1, unfortunately, my reply brief, I notice it says 51.6, but it's 56.1, where there's no response to the additional facts, they stand admitted. But taking those facts together with all the inferences to be drawn therefrom in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, because we are, after all, here presenting this case to this court pursuant to summary judgment jurisprudence and principles, we submit to the court that there are really two scenarios that are presented here. One is that the severe turbulence forecast was reached at the Cleveland Center, which controlled this whole airspace into which this particular Southwest Airlines flight was proceeding. It took off from the Cleveland Airport on its way back to Chicago, and that the forecast was reached, and it simply was not passed on to the controllers. So, of course, as a matter of common sense, the controller could not convey this information to the pilot. And there was no other government procedure for the pilot to get this information.
Would you agree, Mr. Jovan, that the MIS report, MIS-02
yes.
report that you're talking about, was provided to the Southwest Airlines dispatcher?
I think, Your Honor, it was made available to the dispatcher because getting to the MIS, Meteorological Impact Statement, which I'd like to preface if I could, defendants, experts, two experts, one controller expert and one weather expert, admitted that that is a weather forecast. The man who put this information into the Meteorological Impact Statement, Thomas Janis, is the meteorologist at the Cleveland Center. He chose to put it in that statement. He testified that that is a forecast.
Do you think Janis was negligent?
Pardon me?
Do you think meteorologist Janis was negligent? Do you contend that?
Scenario. In the sphere of this case, Your Honor, we are talking and have been since day one about a forecast reaching a pilot.
Mr. Janis reached a forecast and made the decision to put it into an MIS, correct?
Yes.
Do you contend that decision was negligent?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any expert testimony to that effect?
Yes, we do, Your Honor.
Where do we find that?
Huh?
Where do we find that?
It's footnoted in our brief on page 9. Our expert opined that the following was the negligence, failure of the supervisors responsible for the areas and sectors that controlled Southwest airline flight.
That does not suggest that the forecast was negligent or that putting it in the MIS was negligent, does it?
Sure, that the air traffic controllers, I'm reading at the bottom, assigned the flight to an altitude below the known and forecasted severe turbulence identified in MIS-02.
Okay. We know that MIS-02 said that there might be severe turbulence in that area.
Expected, Your Honor.
It says might, right?
No, I'm sorry. I believe it's set forth in our brief, but the actual, it's document 7119. It says frequent moderate to isolated severe turbulence at 17,000 to 27,000 feet.
The phrase that I had quoted, I'm sorry I don't have the source, but frequent moderate to isolated severe turbulence might develop over a large portion of Cleveland Center's airspace the next 12 hours. Did I misread that or get wrong information there?
Well, if we get into Janice's testimony, I believe he said it was expected to occur. But that is the nature of a forecast, frankly. I mean, common sense tells us that we read forecasts every day, and they tell us what the percentage chance of rain is and precipitation and different things like that. The fact is, these pilots requested to fly at 20,000 feet. They were granted permission to fly at 20,000 feet. And
dispatcher?
Pardon me?
Did they check with their dispatcher, who said that if he had had that request, he would have said no?
The dispatcher, we are talking, frankly, about an alternate proximate cause of the occurrence. I know the government spent a lot of time in its brief talking about acts of the pilots, acts of Southwest Airlines,
We're talking about questions of duty in terms of, if I understand your position correctly, there was a duty to take the MIS information and broadcast that directly over the air traffic control channel. Is that right or not?
We have to live with the reality of the situation that the controllers, who are the ones that tell pilots what's going on, not the meteorologist, he placed that into an MIS statement. And if we accept the scenario in this case that controllers are not allowed to, or don't, number one, don't read MIS reports because of their very nature, or they're not allowed to impart anything to a pilot that's in an MIS report. If we take that scenario, we've got a forecast of severe turbulence floating around that the controllers simply did not know about. So how could they convey it to a pilot? And the big picture is the United States government conveying to the pilot. The law is very clear that once a forecast is reached, there is no discretion on behalf of the United States government, acting through all of their people that are responsible for conveying this information, moving it on, but to tell the pilots about it. Well, in this case, the only one in their scenario is a controller that would tell a pilot about it, and the controller did not tell the pilot about it, And the fact of the matter is, the reason he didn't, or he or she didn't tell the pilot, is because he wasn't told about it. He didn't know about it. Because Mr. Janus placed this severe forecast into a MIS report. Now, it's interesting if you look at the MIS report and the definitions for it and what it is called, it is really something that the government wants to say, well, hey, anyway, it's conveyed over the internet and it's on the FAA websites. Like the pilot should have figured that out, or the dispatcher for Southwest Airlines should have figured that out. Maybe yes or no, maybe that is a proximate cause. Who knows? I don't know how it works out in the end, but we're here on a summary judgment. We're not here on a trial judgment of a judge where the clearly erroneous rule applies. We're entitled to have everything interpreted in the plaintiff's favor. And the fact of the matter is, there's a dangerous forecast out there. The pilots were told they could fly at 20,000 feet. They flew at 20,000 feet, and they hit it within minutes after they took off. And it should not have happened. The pilot is very clear on the issue of proximate cause. If I had known that, I'd be out of there in a minute. I'd make a 180-degree turn. I would demand everybody locked down. And the fact of the matter is, he only had 5-second warning here. As soon as he started feeling that, he said, I've got trouble here. I'm in a severe turbulent situation. Within 5 seconds, the whole plane rocked all over the place. And our client suffered severe injuries. It seems to me, if we separate all the wheat from the chaff here, we are talking about a very simple proposition. The whole sphere of this case and all the corollaries that run therefrom, from plaintiff's original complaint to the claim to the FAA and the other matters in this case, the whole sphere of the case includes the acts of all of these people. And it's undisputed, there's a severe forecast that is expected to occur that's been reached, and no pilot in his right mind would fly into it, and he just didn't know about it, and he took off from Cleveland and hit it within a few minutes, and people were injured, or a person was injured. So I would just submit to the court under the scenario of summary judgment and what we're talking about here, plaintiff was entitled to a trial. And I apologize to the court. I got carried away in my brief referring to a jury trial, but there is no jury trial in this case. But
Jovan, if I understand correctly, you're saying Janus should have issued a CWA?
Well, he should have issued something, yes. He should not have placed that into a MIS statement that
is the
that
judgment.
The
is the judgment,
rule say, oh,
Mr.
Control,
Jovan,
you can't use
Jovan,
that. I'm sorry.
Is the judgment as to whether the risk is great enough to put it into a CWA as opposed to an MIS, different kinds of reports with different distributions? Why is that not a discretionary judgment?
I would submit to the court, if I go back to the 11th Circuit concession that's recorded in there, once a forecast is reached by the United States government, it has no discretion but to send that on to the pilot. Now, whatever they got to do internally, they got to send it on. Now, interestingly, we've set forth in our reply brief, Your Honor, I would direct your attention to it because it directly answers a lot of arguments that the government is making. We set forth in there that it was clearly the intention to put this in an MIS, and nobody, that blocked it from anybody seeing it. The pilots could not have the information passed on to them. It's as simple as, I don't like to make anything simple but I'm talking about summary judgment here. We're entitled to have everything construed in light most favorable to us together with all the inferences. The law is very clear. The United States government has no discretion once it reaches a severe turbulence forecast, but to pass that on to the pilots. And the whole structure here it couldn't be done. So it's in the sphere of the original claim. It's certainly within the sphere of our amended complaint, which the court
Mr. Jovent, is it within the sphere? Did you specifically address the negligence of Janus before the trial court?
Well, I don't want to say that we didn't. There was no oral argument. The briefs were all that information was in the voluminous materials and exhibits that were submitted to the trial court.
I'm just concerned this is a new theory on appeal.
Pardon me?
I'm concerned this is a new theory on appeal.
No. I can only to answer that argument, Your Honor. That's an argument the government is making, and incidentally, seeing where they stand, they throw in three more fallback arguments in their brief, which are addressed in our reply brief. I won't address those. But the fact of the matter is, plaintiff's claim originally, plaintiff's amended complaint, which we set forth verbatim, this case is against the United States of America. And all of its employees, representatives, including the FAA. And it concerns the failure to provide the severe turbulence forecast to these pilots, which is uncontradicted. They didn't get such a forecast. And I would submit to the court, while it's centered on before the trial judge or the court below, on this question of the controllers fail to pass this information on, and necessarily included in that is the fact that the controllers didn't have the information to pass on, and the reason they didn't have it is because of the way the Cleveland Center, people under the roof of the Cleveland Center, handled this information.
Thank you, Mr. Chauvin. Your time has expired. Ms. Rosa.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Judge.
That's what the red light means.
What?
Ms. Rosa?
May it please the court. The district court's ruling should be affirmed. The district court entered summary judgment on cross motions for summary judgment. There are no material facts in dispute in this case. I'd like to start by addressing the USAU case that my colleague was just talking about. It's important to put that case in context. That case involved a SIGMET, and that is a weather product that is produced by the Aviation Weather Center out of Kansas City, Missouri. It is an advisory of significant meteorological events, and it is immediately distributed to all pilots once one of those is issued. It's a weather product created for pilots and meant for pilots.
Communicated to the pilots? Is it on a different frequency than the air traffic control frequency?
What happens at a center like this, we're talking about an air traffic control center that handles the high altitude planes, the controller is sitting at his radar scope, and he's got a little printer right to the side of his radar scope. When a weather forecast or advisory to go to pilots is issued, a little piece of paper prints out on his printer, and he picks it up and reads it. For a SIGMET, it will say something like, a SIGMET has been issued advising of severe turbulence in such and such area and altitudes. Please tune into the high WAST frequency to obtain more information. And that's a separate frequency where you can hear the whole thing.
The aircraft commander would have to turn to another frequency to get the high WAST report. Is that correct?
It depends on the pilot. With an airline like this, they would usually tune into their dispatcher, get more information from the dispatch. That's what it's there for. For a general aviation pilot, more small airplanes, they would tune into the high WAS or call a flight service station to get more information.
That's on a different frequency than the
It is on a different That is correct. It's on a different frequency. And the reason for that is they don't want to jam up their traffic control frequency with endless forecasts and broadcasts of weather. It would essentially turn the air traffic control frequency into the high WAS frequency, which is a dedicated frequency for weather dissemination. So that is why it's set up this way, to keep the air traffic control frequency clear for separating airplanes, which is the primary purpose. So the USAU case involved a SIGMET, and the concession that the United States made in that case was that when a SIGMET is issued for severe clear air turbulence, that does need to be read to the pilots, or the alert should be made to the pilots when a SIGMET is issued. That case cannot be read in this context to say that the air traffic controllers are required to read an MIS to the pilots on the air traffic control frequency. As my colleague just admitted, the controllers do not receive meteorological impact statements. They don't read them on the air traffic control frequency. They're not printed on their strip printer. It's a forecast that is not meant for pilots. It's not meant for controllers, and it's not automated to be distributed among the pilots and controllers the way like a SIGMET is.
Could you tell us about the judgment that's involved in deciding whether a particular risk or forecast information should be distributed through either a SIGMET or a CWA or an MIS?
That depends on the professional judgment and discretion of the professional meteorologists in the National Weather Service. They are analyzing a number of different factors. I believe with turbulence, Mr. Janis testified that he has to analyze every pilot report because turbulence will feel different to a small airplane versus a large plane. It could feel different depending on what part of the plane you're sitting in. It could feel different depending on your heading. Mr. Beharry, the supervisor, testified that one plane can hit turbulence in one area. 10 minutes later, another plane will fly through the same exact area, and there will be no turbulence. It changes rapidly. It's extremely difficult to forecast.
And that, I gather, is why the MIS is really of marginal utility to a pilot. The turbulence may be there 1 minute, not there 5 minutes later.
That is correct. And the meteorologist really does not know that turbulence is happening until a pilot reports it. It's not displayed on any type of weather display. It's extremely difficult to figure out that it's happening until someone hits it and to determine where it's going to be. You look at the wind shear. I mean, they're professionals. They spend their careers doing aviation weather forecasts. So a center weather advisor that you were talking about before, it has a small time period. It's valid for only up to 2 hours. So it's weather that's happening immediately and in the immediate future. So that's something that is of interest to pilots who are operating in real time. The MIS is meant for flow control purposes. So that goes to the big picture FAA managers who are saying, hey, there's thunderstorms down in Dallas. That's going to impact the flow of air traffic over the entire country if those planes get stuck down there. So they're looking at the big picture. It's valid from 2 hours from when he makes it until up to 12 hours. So it's in the future. It's a forecast. As you all know from reading the daily forecast, the weatherman doesn't always get it right. And they don't want the MIS to be used for operational purposes by pilots because it is meant to be a big picture, long-term forecast.
If we could turn to the law for a moment. Do you think this case is best analyzed as a matter of duty or a matter of causation?
Duty necessarily comes first in the analysis. The district court ruled that controllers do have a duty to disseminate, as she put it, certain weather products and didn't expand beyond that. I would say you would start with duty. For sure, there's no duty to disseminate an MIS because it is for air traffic control, flow control managers only. It's not meant for the controllers to give to pilots. We're asking for an affirmance of the district court's decision, in which case we would agree there's a duty to disseminate certain weather products. Which weather products that is depends on the situation. And in this case, there were no weather products that the controllers had a duty to disseminate that they did not disseminate. Plaintiffs have not identified a single report or forecast that was meant to go to pilots that did not get distributed according to the standard procedures.
So, Ms. Rosa, if this MIS had been given to the controllers, would the okay have been given to fly at 20,000 feet?
The controllers don't determine what altitudes the pilots are going to fly at. The pilots select their own altitude. If they want to fly into turbulence or a hurricane or bad weather, the controllers cannot stop them from doing it. So the controllers would have had to approve what the pilots requested, regardless of whether they received an MIS.
That statement, if I recall, was in your brief as well, and it kind of made me stop. traffic controllers have significant authority to change the path of the aircraft once it's airborne. Do they not?
To change the altitude?
Yeah.
If the pilot requests to change his altitude, they'll most likely approve that unless there's another airplane in the way. But the controllers do not select the altitudes. The pilot selected it. And it's almost all automated these days. This entire system is all automated, standardized, run by computers. The airline pre-files what altitude it's going to fly at before it even takes off.
You mean if you have two aircraft at 30,000 feet, and for one reason or another, they're getting a little bit too close to each other. The ATC can't tell one of them to go to 28,000?
He could do that, Your Honor.
Well, that's not what your brief said. That kind of got a big red question mark out in the margin when I was reading.
Certainly.
Like an awful absolute statement for the government to make. The air traffic controller has no authority to change the altitude of the aircraft.
Certainly, yes.
They don't file the flight plan for the guy. But once he gets in the air, they've got to keep everybody separated.
That is correct. And certainly if there's a safety issue or two airplanes are getting too close to each other, they'll tell one to slow up, slow down generally, or they could certainly tell them to change their altitude and the pilot.
My understanding was an aircraft commander will request that he be allowed to change his altitude once in flight. He may or may not be granted it by the ATC, depending on what else is up.
That's correct.
He simply doesn't decide he's going to move 2,000 feet one way or another. Tell somebody about it later.
Yes, you'd certainly want approval beforehand because there could be someone below you. You wouldn't want to hit them.
Ms. Rosa, is the right distinction here, if I understand this correctly, sir, that if there's a pilot report of actual turbulence, that goes to the air traffic controllers, they pass that on immediately, right?
That's correct.
Pilot hits turbulence, we know there's actual turbulence, people are told, the plane that's 10 miles behind in that flight path can then take appropriate action, et cetera, right?
That's correct.
Is the appropriate distinction here between reports of actual turbulence and forecasts of possible turbulence in terms of what the pilots are supposed to get?
Yes, it's an extremely important distinction in this case. It is blurred sometimes in the briefs. An example is in this case, after these pilots hit the turbulence and they reported it, a few minutes later, they received a report of another airplane, a DC-9, that had also hit turbulence in their general area. It popped up immediately on their automated in-flight display system from their dispatcher. They didn't remember if it was read by the controllers, but they heard it. They were on the frequency. They heard that that had happened. When we're talking about the MIS, it's a forecast. It's what might happen hours in the future. They don't know that it's actually happening. So in this case, there were no reports of severe turbulence before this plane hit it. It was the first one to make a report, and then it went out as a pilot report.
Did anybody specify turbulence at a particular altitude?
At what location?
Well, that's the point, I guess. Did the MIS itself say there will be turbulence at a particular altitude over the next 12 hours?
It forecasted frequent, moderate to isolated severe turbulence over a 5-state area, a 10,000-foot block of airspace.
10,000 feet.
Yes. So Mr. Janus could not pinpoint a specific place. He could not say it will happen here or here. He said, here's a 5-state area, isolated turbulence might develop over the next 12 hours in this enormous area. That was the best he was able to do using his judgment, his discretion as a professional meteorologist.
Could I follow up on one of Judge Ripple's earlier questions, Ms. Rosa, about is it common for pilots to change the altitude of their flight plan without checking with dispatchers, airline pilots, that is?
They have the authority to do so once the pilot has taken off. The airplane is in his control. He is the one in command of that airplane, so they do tend to change altitude without checking with the dispatcher once they're on flight. Before they take off, the dispatcher and the pilot together must authorize the flight at a certain altitude, which is probably why the dispatcher was a little annoyed here that this pilot flew at a different altitude than he had approved it for. But once they're flying, it's the captain's plane. He can change the altitude if he wants to. And if there are no further questions, I will conclude.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Rosa.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Jovan, you used up all your time, but if you want a minute for rebuttal, you've got it. Mm.
Thank you, Your Honors. The whole federal plan about reporting severe turbulence, we've set it forth on page 10 of our brief, that they need to perform their duties and they need to report all hazardous weather. I think it's a foregone conclusion. The additional arguments, I think I mentioned earlier that the government has backed up their about we sued the wrong, made the claim to the wrong agency and everything. We've covered all that in our proximate cause, and it's all in our reply brief. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Jovan. The case is taken under advisement.